The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Bill Myers.
Welcome to Monday, September 23rd, 2024. 56 degrees and going to be hot for the next couple of days. And then it turns instantly into fall. One of those kind of situations. You can join the conversation at 770-5633-770-KMED. My email, bill@billmyersshow.com. How you doing? What's on your mind today, and what do you feel like talking about? We have a little bit of time here early in the show if you wanted to join in as I go over some of the headlines. Some of the people I have coming up today, it's actually going to be a little bit guest-heavy, though. Ed Bartlett's going to join me, and he is from Save Services. It's a men's organization. And the story is, well, at least traditionally, the story has been that suburban white women, especially suburban liberal white women, were going to be the people who decide this presidential this contest between Trump and Harris. And Ed and others are thinking that maybe it's going to be the disaffected males, disaffected men that are dissatisfied with things that are going on that may have more sway this time around. I don't know if that's the case or not, but we'll talk with Ed about that. Ed's been part of a group that's been working really hard to make sure that men and males get their due process on college campuses, because for the longest time, all you had to do to be guilty of whatever was accused of you is being a male, especially a white male. And males and white males are kind of getting tired of the always having to put your head down. I'm sorry. Maybe put down the soy latte and start eating some red meat and cruciferous vegetables that will increase testosterone levels. Okay. Anyway, we'll have a good talk with Ed about that after 6:30. And then we have Chris Barnett, who is running for Josephine County Commissioner. And there's been a lot of drama going on up there because I guess they're making a big deal because Chris Barnett is a real estate guy, and he's performed a lot of real estate transactions, has done business with current Josephine County Commissioner John West, which in the fevered mind of some in Josephine County means that he's in the pocket of John West. I don't know if that is the case or not. We'll have to talk with Chris about that. That's the claim. And, essentially you have, it's like a civil war going on there when it comes to the county commission right now. A soft civil war, right? State Rep. Dwayne Junker joining in because he and others want to introduce a state version of the SAVE Act. The SAVE Act, that's the one that would require that you actually prove your citizenship before you're allowed to sign up to vote. Well, I hope that Dwayne is successful getting the SAVE Act passed in the state of Oregon. I don't know how they could, given that you'd have to have Democrats want to do it, because the SAVE Act is not going to get passed in Congress, because I was just looking at this over the weekend. Congress unanimously passes legislation to increase protection for presidential nominees. Okay, so that was 405-0. They also passed a CR, which means they're going to pay for the government through the end of the year, which I think is the worst thing that I've heard about. The whole idea is that you wanted to at least pay for this through March, because you know what's going to happen? In December, they're going to have the Christmas tree bill. All of these outgoing senators and Congress critters or people who may be coming back too are just going to just go nuts on spending. That's what they're going to do. But apparently, that's all the votes were. I know the Gateway Pundit will be setting Congressman and Speaker of the House Mike Johnson on fire today because he didn't have the save. He wasn't able to get the SAVE Act in there. There wasn't votes for it. There just wasn't votes for it, folks. And I know I hate to to put it this way. You can't. There's no point in trying to run it through there. And I'm just curious if there would be votes in the state of Oregon. You kind of have to think of how controversial or how weird of a country it is right now when it is controversial to require proof of citizenship in order to vote in the citizens' elections. I know that is something that is just sort of bizarre. Of course, in times past, we didn't have to worry about so many non-citizens getting ballots because they're just automatically given them by the states. It's almost like it's a conspiracy of sorts. Nah, it couldn't be that. It's just people try to make it easy for everybody to vote in our democracy. But, yeah, that did not make it. SAVE Act did not get passed in Congress. And it was pretty clear that they were not going to be able to. The votes were not there. And I know the Gateway pundit will tell you it's just because Mike Johnson is a rhino. And I wish it were that simple. Mike Johnson may be a rhino, but there also weren't votes for the SAVE Act because you had to get it through the Senate. And the Senate was not going to pass it, too. Do you remember when Rick Manning, president of Americans for Limited Government, has said that nothing big and important ever gets in to this period of the year? Remember that? Well, this was a classic example of that. Anything which is truly big and consequential will never be done in the final weeks of Congress going into an election season, going into the election, into the presidential election. It just doesn't happen. So it was always a false push for the SAVE Act anyway in the first place. Maybe that was just to placate conservatives. I don't know. But I thought it would have been a great idea, but I also realized that they probably don't have the votes because you have those three kinds of Republicans. There's the kind of Republicans that the Freedom Caucus that will never compromise on anything, so everything just gets gummed up and nothing passes. You have the people who are truly, truly liberals and that are like the Susan Collin types that are just, truly Republicans in names only. And then you have the vast majority of Republicans who are thinking that things are kind of okay. You know, we're really here just to get the proper tax and a few regulatory changes and things like that. You know, that's what, nothing really big. Things for the most part are really kind of okay, rather than realizing that what's happening with the Democratic Party is that it's an open war on anything the Republican Party might want, including their social issues. But that's just me. That's just me. But I think Rick is absolutely right on that particular issue. All right. What are some of the other news here? New York Times breaking news just announced this a few minutes ago. Donald Trump has pulled ahead of Kamala Harris in Arizona, apparently leading in tight races in Georgia and North Carolina. This according to a New York Times Siena poll just released this morning. I don't have access to the particulars or the big information on that. But the overall is that Trump pulling ahead of Harris in Arizona and holding on to leads in Georgia and North Carolina. I'd be curious about Pennsylvania. I'll take a look and see if that's a part of that also. President Trump, meanwhile, declined a second debate on CNN after Harris agrees and saying it's just too late. Yeah, he said that I guess they were going to do this late in October, October 23rd. What's the point? Voting's already started in most of the states. It's kind of dumb to do a debate at that point in time. Now, you did a debate next week. I would have been cool with that. That would have been fine. But really, let's be honest. Debates are really more about helping Kamala right now. Donald Trump is not a particularly great debater as far as staying focused on message, those sort of things. He's not particularly a great debater, in my opinion. He has great heart. I don't think it's necessarily a great debater, and not that Kamala is much better, but the media is always in the tank for Kamala. And so it's really about trying to get more of her message out there, and it would tend to help Kamala more. So I think Trump was actually wise to turn down the debate. I don't know if you have an opinion on that, though. I'll take your call on it. Do you think Trump was right to say no to an October 23rd debate? I thought it was a good idea. I thought it was good. It's like, it's no point. There's nothing to be won from this at this point. All right, other big world news. Israeli strikes in Lebanon on Monday today, killing at least 100 people, injuring hundreds more. This according to Lebanon's health ministry. Hezbollah, meanwhile, raining dozens of rockets and drones into northern Israel a day after its deputy chief pledged to continue attacking until Israel ended its military campaign in Gaza. So I'd imagine there's going to be a lot of rockets raining on Gaza here. Tim Walz, Kamala's a second in there. Let a little bit of truth slip out the other day. It was kind of weird. He was in Pennsylvania over the weekend, and Walz declared that America can't afford four more years of this. He was criticizing former President Donald Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance, and said, they want to tell you that you should just get over it. It's a fact of life. This is the way it is, he says. Harris simply has said that it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be this way. We can't afford four more years of this. Kind of like forgetting, oh, you guys were the incumbents, right? You were the last 4 years of this. But, you know, it is kind of funny that way, that every now and then politicians commit faux pas in Washington, D.C., or really when you end up telling the truth. It's like when Kamala Harris, in my opinion, when she says that my values haven't changed, she says that a lot. She's right. She is telling the truth. Her values haven't changed. The only thing which has changed is what she tells the voters. And what she's telling the voters right now is an attempt to say, well, yeah, I was against fracking before I'm for fracking. And the EV ban, well, I can't really tell much. I'm back and forth on this. Kind of a moving target. But believe me, her values really are the same. When she says her values are still the same, take her at her word, okay? It's 22 after 6. You're on the Bill Myers Show. I hope your morning's going well. We'll cover some of the other headlines coming up.
Your smile is the key to your health and confidence. Do you know that 1 out of 2 adults do not regularly see their dentist due to fear?
Specialist Foley here for September. Kelly's Automotive Service, where we service your vehicle, but take care of you.
Hi, I'm Matt Stone, owner of Stone Heating and Air, and I'm on 106.3 KMED.
24 minutes after 6, join in, 770-5633, 770-KMED. By the way, Dr. Powers is going to be taking a look back at the Biscuit Fire. That's going to be today's historical profile, and it's an interesting story. I know, but 22 years. Ed has been trying to get me out there for quite some time. I've never had a chance to take a look at the Biscuit Fire burned area myself personally. But we'll see what the doc has to say about that after 8 o'clock this morning. OPB and others reporting that a plan to make 1 million acres of federal land in Oregon available for solar energy projects is in the works right now. 1 million acres, that's a lot even, you know, in our state here. Officials at BLM announcing that they had finalized a plan to add Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Washington, and Wyoming to its existing Western Solar Plan. It's an Obama-era project that expanded permitting for solar projects on federal land. And when they first put this out or rolled this out in 2012, apparently, it only included Arizona, California, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, and Utah. And the expansion would include more than 1 million acres in Oregon that officials deem to be of low risk for any adverse environmental effects from solar installations, which means that you can shade it and it's not going to kill some tortoise or, you know, some snail darter or whatever it might be. Also, the plots need to be within 15 miles of existing or planned transmission lines. Yeah, that's a big one if you don't have the power lines nearby. But even then, within 15 miles, boy, even 15 miles, it's hugely expensive to build a 15-mile power line. But they're trying to do everything to make us more dependent on solar. About 3% of Oregon's electricity has come from solar in recent years, this according to the Energy Information Administration. And so they're looking to do this. The plan marks a major expansion for clean energy production. I'll be curious to see what type of solar power that they're looking at, because one of the biggest challenges that they've still not been able to fix is that, you know, you can put up all the solar, you could cover everything in solar cells, but you'll still only have solar energy coming when the sun is up. And we're in the northern latitudes and we have shorter days, especially in the wintertime, than many other areas that are further down south. You know, that kind of area. That's why they did so much of this in California. And I noticed that the picture that they showed in the OPB version of this article had a different kind of solar, it wasn't just a solar electrical cell, you know, like the type we're used to. It was the type using mirrors that would then reflect the sunlight into a collector in the center. I don't know if I'd ever mention this to you, but back when I was a very young DJ, 1980, in Barstow, they had it was kind of like a trial solar plant that they put out. I think it was in Daggett, shortly, not too far outside of Barstow, and it was called Solar One. And it was a really interestingly designed project. And this was the early attempt at trying to get some solar energy on the grid 40-something years ago. And I went out there for the christening of it, or they broke the champagne bottle or whatever it was, but they started putting this up. And ended up having hundreds of mirrors all around the around this collector, and then it would send the solar energy into a collector, and there was liquid sodium inside this collector that would absorb the heat. They would be pumped into underground storage tanks, and then would also then be used to generate electricity through the heat. I think there was a boiler, and it would use the intense heat from the sun focused onto the liquid sodium being circulated. It was molten sodium, I believe, being circulated throughout it. And then it would generate steam, which would then generate electricity. And what was very different about that, as contrasted with putting solar cells everywhere, is that the way Solar One worked is that you would heat up so much sodium, or there'd be so much energy in the daytime, and you would have these underground tanks that had the sodium and the hot water and everything else, is that the plant would also run at nighttime. And I thought that was a pretty interesting way of doing it, because the big problem, the big negative of conventional solar cell energy is that it goes away at night. And then people say, well, we'll just build lots of Tesla batteries, except Tesla, you know, the batteries are very expensive, lots of environmental issues involved with them, and they have to be replaced on a certain, you know, on a certain schedule. And it's a very expensive part of trying to make sure that you have electricity at nighttime when people really need it, when it's really cold or when it's really hot, and, you know, those kind of things. And so Solar One worked at nighttime too. You'd get so much solar heat put into the salt through the whole day, through the molten salt, molten sodium rather, that at nighttime, they would have all this residual heat, and they would continue to power the generator. And so it worked 24/7. In the daytime, it would charge up, and it would put out electricity. And at nighttime, even when the sun was gone, it would still put out electricity. Now, that plant's gone now. I was just taking a look at it a few days ago that, you know, it's no longer in existence. I guess that was decommissioned. But like I said, it's 40-something years old. That was an early version. I'm sure they could probably do it better. But they had a picture like that in the OPB, which makes me wonder if that's the kind of plant that they're going to be considering doing and putting that in. And if so, that's smarter than just trying to put conventional solar cells on everything. That just and then you'd have to find a, you know, some kind of a battery system or something to charge it up in the day so you have something at night, because we need 24/7 power if you're going to go down that gangrene Mary Highway. So maybe they're looking at more of that. Could be. I can't say. It may have just been someone over at Oregon Public Broadcast just, well, let's put in a solar cell collector type plant instead of solar cells. But I don't know. Could be that way. That would be smarter if they were looking more into that. It's 6:30. Hi, good morning, KBD. Who's this?
Hey, Bill. Swell Salmon.
Hey, Steve. How are you doing?
Well, things just amaze me. I remember high school chemistry class where they demonstrated sodium, which is a white metal. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a soft metal. The teacher carved off a piece of this metal and put it into a beaker of water, and yeah, it exploded.
Yes. Yes, it did. It's very volatile. It's very active, chemically active. Yes.
So you're gonna heat up sodium, and then you're going to use it to heat up water to make steam to run a generator. What could go wrong?
Well, you know, apparently they found a way to do it, that at least back then they did it. They never had any explosions of it. They were able to keep the sodium separate from the water. But you are right about that. I remember those. Yeah.
It kills birds, Bill. That's why they took it out. The birds would fly by that tower, and it would cook them.
Oh, but we can always have more birds. God makes more birds. It's just like, it doesn't matter. So you can put up windmills, too, yeah, you know.
The windmills kill a lot of birds, but this killed a lot more. Bats, anything that flies that got up in the area of the collector would just be incinerated.
Absolutely no doubt about that. I'm sure, but that is considered, well, remember, this is considered what, collateral damage in order to save the planet, Steve.
Yeah, the Bill Gates reactor, nuclear reactors are going to use liquid sodium also, and I'm still wondering about all that.
It must be a very efficient, not coolant, but you know, some transfer. It transfers heat.
Yeah. The nuclear reactor will heat the sodium up much hotter than it can water. There's physical limits to how hot water can get.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's supposed to make a great nuclear reactor, and it's also safe because as soon as the heat's not applied, it will just go back to being a metal again.
Mm-hmm.
But I still see that sodium in the beaker of water, and I'm going, you know. Yeah, and I've also worked around boilers, and you have to in a combustion boiler, you have to replace the tubes. The tubes are full of water in the boiler.
Yeah, and they have to be replaced on a routine basis too, I'd imagine too. By the way, you take off though, I wanted to tell you a little sidelight on the sodium. How sodium, you throw it in water and it blows up. Somebody at El Toro High School back when I was going there in Mission, you know, down in Southern California, I was there for a year and a half, I think in my sophomore and junior year. And somebody stole some sodium out of the chemical lab and they threw it in the toilet and it blew the toilet out of the boys' room. I remember one day. It was kind of like their chemical lab M80, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I remember an incident that happened in my chemistry class. I won't tell you, but some kid did something and almost burned up the teacher's book. You know,
I think we all have stories like that at one point. Steve, we really do. Of course, now that would probably put you on the terrorist watch list, right? We're a little tougher on the poor kids.
I can still see the poor old teacher standing there with the purple flames coming out of the beaker and smoke billowing and the fire alarm going off.
Memories. I love that. Thank you, Wild Seven. Let me go to the next line. Hi, good morning. This is Bill. Who's this? Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Bill. This is Bob in Medford.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
My chemistry class, it was potassium that was very explosive. But two things. One, over the long weekend here, the broadcast fly for the Medford Police, Jackson County Police and Fire has been offline. I'm just wondering if any of your scanner folks out there know if that is related to their new digital format or if something else is going on.
I don't know for a fact there, okay. But I assure you that the moment they get their keen new digital radio in place, you're not going to be able to listen to them anymore.
Okay. Well, they always had TAC 2 for their confidential stuff, but it would be nice just to know what's going on, because if you hear sirens blaring off, you always could get on the scanner and kind of get a sense and the limited, you know, speak on that of what's going on versus waiting for any other media to let you know what's happening.
I haven't kept up on the project or that particular project. And because I'm not a scanner guy, I'm not one of those people. I know a lot of people do that, but I'll reach out to the folks who run a Jackson County scanner and find out if that's gone away. All right.
Okay. And on a lighter note, with energy,
mm-hmm.
we should pump lithium water into Crater Lake, put a cathode and anode in there, and we'd have a nice big battery for Oregon.
Yeah, we have a nice lithium ion battery of sorts, right?
There you go, buddy.
All right. Hey, thanks, Bob. Let me go to line 3. Hi. Good morning. Who's this? Welcome. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, hi.
Yeah, Joel here.
Yeah, Joel, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I lived in Lake County for a couple of years, and I lived up on Cobb Mountain. And once those wells are drilled, it's continuous steam whenever they need it. Mm-hmm. And there's no boiler to clean out because, you know, those holes in the ground are like 3 and 4 feet in diameter, and they go down there a mile.
Yeah, you're talking about geothermal plants, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, they're successfully being used in Iceland and places like that. And
the only challenge with geothermal is that very highly mineralized water, and so there is a corrosion aspect you have to deal with the heat transfer, from what I understand.
Right, and then the other one is tidal. As the waves pound into shore, I mean, we had a couple of back where over in Germany and Holland, where they were working on underwater turbines, but they were going with the 3-blade design. And I see if you go with the more of the mushroom shape, like a vent hatch on top of your big industrial building, they have the vent hatch. They you know, 10 less of a tendency to take out the fish population.
Well, in other words, a way to generate water from wave energy without grinding the fish up. What a concept.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thanks for the suggestion. Let me go to line four. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Hello?
Good morning.
Hi, who's this?
This is Bartlett calling in for our interview.
Oh, hey, I'm glad you're there. I'll be right with you. I was just going to call you. I'm just a little bit behind, okay? Be right with you.
All right.
See, I like that when you have a guest that is more prompt than I am. So I'm going to have to apologize to him profusely, folks. And we will do this in just a moment because Ed Bartlett is standing by. We'll talk with him in a matter of seconds on KMED 99.3 KBXG. And he has a really interesting group. It's out. It's called Save Services, saveservices.org, making sure that that men have their due process rights on college campuses, which has been a little sketchy the last few years.
Life's busy, and off is not an option.
Something I've been hearing in this election cycle for the last several months, maybe the last several years here, is the female forward future in which the people who are going to decide the presidential election this November are going to be women, mostly young, liberal, suburban women. We're going to be the people who are going to decide this. And conventional wisdom may be getting turned on its head this time, according to the latest. And I wanted to talk about that with Edward Bartlett, who is the founder of SAVE, www.saveservices.org. And that's an organization focused on fairness and due process on college campuses. And we'll talk about what's happening there, too, a little bit later in this conversation. But Edward, you are you're all over this particular story. So the much hassled white male, especially, might have more to do in this particular election than we thought before, or maybe just men in general than what we've been told up to this point. What's the latest saying, huh? Welcome.
Yeah, that is quite an interesting story. Let me just preface it by saying November is Men's Equality Month. Men's Equality Month in November. We all know that March is Women's History Month, but there's been no attention to the issues facing men, including college men. So we're going to be sponsoring Men's Equality Month in November. I can tell you more about that if you want.
Okay.
Let's turn to your, specific issue of the November 5th elections. So yes, there's a lot of buzz. There's a lot of discussion that men may be the swing vote, the proverbial swing vote in November. You've probably heard of this new group called White Dude for Harris. Now, I haven't decided for sure whether it's a joke or it's really, but it really is. There really is a website called White Dudes for Harris. I don't know. They don't say anything about policy. It's mostly a fundraising mechanism. But
yeah, well, I just figured it was a bunch of guys sitting around drinking soy lattes and saying, yes, ma'am. I don't know, but seriously, white dudes for Harris. I'm trying to think about what has Kamala Harris ever done for a white dude. Period is what I was thinking. But sometimes how guys are though, Edward. Sometimes guys will. To get to the liberal women, okay, if they got to say they're going to vote for Kamala Harris, maybe that's part of the dating scene. I don't know. I'm just kind of having fun with you on it, but maybe that's what that's all about. But maybe this is a trend, though. Seriously, the people trying to court that vote in seriousness?
Well, the answer is absolutely yes. And everybody, there's been a slew of media articles, CNN, Huffington Post, Newsweek, USA Today, all of these articles, all these publications have talking about men, especially working class men, being the new swing voters in upcoming in November. And if I can, let me just throw a couple numbers at you.
Sure.
So let's go all the way back to 2016 when Trump beat Hillary Clinton, and he won most likely because of the male vote. He won by 11 points. 11 points means Trump got 52% of the male vote. Clinton got only 41%. Subtract 41 from 52. That equals 11. 11 points is big because 1 point in the electorate is about 1.5 million voters. Okay, so we're talking about a lot of votes. Now, fast forward to 2020. Hey, that 11-point lead by Trump shrunk to only 8 points, all right, from 11 points to 8 points in those years. And, you know, we could argue the reason for that, but I think there's no doubt that that was a major contributor to Trump's defeat in 2020.
And you know what I've thought about that a lot over the years. I remember what was going on in the Trump campaign in the Trump administration in the lead up. And I have a feeling, and this is just a theory of mine, Edward, I don't know if this works for you or not, that I remember the Trump administration doing a lot of work with the Kardashian-type people. Everybody seemed to be concentrating on getting blacks and Hispanics over into the Trump world. And I have to say that males in general were kind of given short shrift in that 2020 campaign. Would you agree with that a little bit? It seems like everybody was concentrating on getting blacks and Hispanics, and they were doing things like sentencing reform, you know, all that sort of stuff. And these were like conservative or Republican sentencing reform deals. And I thought it's kind of a strange thing to be doing, you know, going into the 2020 election. But I think that was what they thought, that they would get more minority votes than they might have picked up. I'm just curious if you had any thoughts on that, thinking back to that period.
Well yeah. So you may recall that under Trump, a new Title IX regulation that emphasized due process came into effect, mm-hmm. and you have to say that was really a big deal for college students. Male college students have been willfully, falsely accused of sexual assault. So yes, but my theory, Bill, for the loss was that, look at all of the campaign rallies. Everybody was waving a sign that said Women for Trump. Now, how many signs did you see at any of those rallies that said Men for Trump?
I don't really recall that. I think they just assumed that men were going to be there.
Well, I think that's exactly the point. The men were taken for granted. They basically decided, heck, if they're going to ignore me, and many men did not know about this new Title IX regulation, so they switched their vote, and that is clearly one of the leading reasons why Trump lost in 2020. All right. Let's fast forward to now, 2024. Right now, according to the latest poll, Trump is leading among men by, guess what, 8 points. It's the same margin as 2020. In other words, there's no evidence that he has made any further inroads to regain his lead from 2016. That is extremely worrisome.
So the point would be that he better work to get that extra 2 or 3% men back within his fold. Fair enough.
Well, if we're going to have white dudes for Harris, I really think that the Republicans need to have some kind of answer to this, to sort of at least show that they really care about the issues affecting men. You probably heard that. You know who Senator Josh Hawley is from Missouri? He actually wrote a whole book titled Manhood. This came out last year. So it's not like people are, in general, that men are being ignored. You look at this book, it's a very good book. There's also a new movement called She for He. In other words, there's a movement afoot of women who are so concerned about the disparities affecting men that they are creating this movement She for He. So there is a lot happening to help men, but unfortunately I don't know that the Trump campaign is tuned into that.
Well, I'm also not sure if and I know this is something just you and me and several thousand listeners this morning might agree with me on or not, but I honestly think that one of the biggest challenges is that the Republican Party in general seems to be embarrassed by the fact that it has a base of white voters, because you're not supposed to have it. It's the wrong kind of voters. And I swear that they campaign out there nationally as if they're embarrassed about having white people who like to vote for their candidates sometimes. And could there be a little bit of that going on?
Well, I think I tend to agree with you. You know, I think that, you know, our friends on the Marxist left have created a narrative that pits everybody against everybody else.
Right.
You know, whites
right.
against blacks and men against women and immigrants. I mean, the types of of the ways that people are being pitted against each other are manifold and really disturbing. So I think you may well be onto something with that there is this narrative that, oh yeah, a black vote somehow is more valued than a white vote. I mean, that's pure nonsense.
But once again, it's about the way it's portrayed out there. And I think that if the Republicans would make sure that they lock up their base, and their base includes, you know, a lot of men and a lot of whites, you know, frankly, just embrace them all. I mean, yeah, it's like, don't reach out to Hispanics and or blacks or whatever it is that you may or may not get when you look at traditional voting patterns. I mean, nothing. Hey, if you want to join the party, great. You know, that's fine. I'm good with this. But I'm hoping that they figure this out, because you only got about, 40 days or so to do this. And if the Democrats are reaching out to men, it's because they need them, right? That means that we can't afford to lose them either, Edward, is all I would say.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, yeah, and I was just reading this article just earlier today about the fact that there is no it's titled "The Republican Party's Plan to Win Over Black Men is a Mess." This just came out recently, earlier this year. So, yeah, I think the Republicans listening to this interview really need to wake up and say, "Hey, folks, we can't help black people unless we're elected into power." And so we can't help men unless we're elected into power.
Edward Bartlett. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Complete that thought. I'm sorry to interrupt you there.
Yeah, it's just a matter of real politics. I mean, we have to have the necessary vote if we're gonna restore the democracy.
Edward Bartlett is the founder of SAVE, SAVEServices.org. And, of course, we're talking about a very strong possibility that a mail vote may be part of the tipping point one way or the other. Now, the latest polling coming out of the New York Times, of all places, indicating that Trump seems to be up a point or two in some various battleground states and looking a little bit better. But, of course, a lot can happen in 40 days, so you have to campaign like you're losing at all times here. I think you'd agree with that, Ed. I wanted to, and thank you for bringing that story, that men likely will determine the outcome of this November presidential election. Great story. Now, I wanted to go back on your main battle over at Safe Services for a few minutes before we take off, if you don't mind, because you have brought stories about how men, young men especially, have been under attack on college campuses for quite some time, in which the rules were all someone had to do was accuse and the accusation was the conviction. And Safe Services was always fighting for due process, to actually get due process on college campuses rather than young men just being thrown out of college and destroyed based on accusations. Many of them were false. And what is the current situation for young men on college campus?
Well, your question is very good and very timely, because you may recall at Pacific University, just down the road from you, earlier this year, there was a $3.9 million jury award to a student named Peter Steele, who had been falsely accused of sexual assault and was handled, his case was handled egregiously by the campus Title IX machine. So, yes, so this Pacific University lawsuit and jury award is really kind of, it's not unusual in the broader picture of what's happening around the country. So, yeah, we need to continue to fight for fundamental notions of due process, 14th Amendment, and so forth on college campuses.
Edward, why do we even have college boards of inquiry for such matters when it comes to sexual assault, rape accusations, things like that? Why is it not just put into the criminal justice system? If someone says that they were raped, you take it to the police. That's what everybody else has to do. Why do we seem to have such different ways of dealing with it on a college campus?
Yeah. Well, your question is very appropriate, and sadly, the answer goes all the way back to 2011 when our President Obama and Vice President Biden implemented a new policy at the Department of Education and basically said, unless you institute these kangaroo courts on college campuses, we will yank your federal funding. That is the reality of what happened 2011. Oh.
Has any of that changed since that time?
In April, let's go back. Under Trump, they implemented a new due process regulation that was very good. But guess who just negated that regulation? Joe Biden. They now have a new Title IX regulation that is far worse than the previous situation. So it's like a seesaw. We go back and forth, you know, due process or no due process.
All right. Now, these accusations, this is obviously through an administrative process, correct? What they do on college campuses?
That's correct, yes.
How would a young man falsely accused be able to get his true constitutional rights in an Article III constitutional court? Is there a method to do that, even in this kangaroo court type system? Do you know?
Well, I think the key here is that any student accused of any heinous crime needs to get legal representation. Do not try to defend yourself at these kangaroo courts. And if necessary, threaten to file a lawsuit. There have been literally hundreds of lawsuits filed against colleges to date. And in the majority of these lawsuits, a slim majority, the accused student has actually prevailed in the lawsuit. So, unfortunately, that's the point that all of this has come to.
Edward Bartlett, the founder of SAVE, SaveServices.org, organization focused on fairness and due process on college campuses. Yeah, I didn't want to let you go without at least catching up on what you've been doing, because I know there's been a lot of good work there. And I appreciate that someone is looking out there for people's constitutional rights. And to make sure that just being convicted by being male in the college system is no longer going to move forward. Hey, we'll have you back, Edward, and thanks so much for the report, okay? You take care and be well.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
You take care.
6:58, and you're on KMED and 99.3 KBXG, waking up with the Bill Myers Show.